As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, well, James, we had planned to do a show after the Anaheim game, kind of wrap up the Leafs road trip. But I did not expect us to be... Well, I guess I sort of expected us maybe to be talking about this sort of stuff, but not this sort of stuff with Sheldon Keefe and what he ended up doing in that game against the Ducks. If I had told you 100 scenarios of what could have played out in that game on Sunday night after what happened in the game against Los Angeles. If I had told you that Mitch Marner was going to get benched, where would that rank in your 100 scenarios? Like I thought of what could happen in that game. Like maybe they still don't come out with what you're expecting to see from them, but I had never contemplated for half a second that that would be what happens.
Isn't it? It's just classic that they get up 3-1. They're playing the worst team in the league. The end of a road trip where they've played really poorly.
Yep.
It kind of felt like, okay, they're gonna tap one out here against a bad team. And even when they were, you know, they let one goal, it's 3-2. It's like, oh, they're probably just gonna, you know, whatever. They're gonna win this game, and then it's gonna be like, last year that this happened where they went in and they beat Chicago, and it was they didn't play very well, but they beat Chicago, and it was kind of the start of them gaining. So that's kind of what it felt like to me watching the early stages of the game. And then it just completely comes unglued, including, you know, what was going on with, you know, the broadcast was all over it with, you know, not only did Marner miss a shift, but he went and got a new stick off the rack and went down under the tunnel and demolished the stick. And, you know, you're watching that, and this is not, you've been on the trip, so I have questions for you. You've been around the team. I haven't. I've been watching on TV, but it does not feel like a team that is very centered right now. It feels like they just feel very, very fragile.
Yes, and that's the right word. Yeah.
10 games into the season, you know, and it's amazing because it's the same thing that happened last year. The difference last year was they were coming off of that playoff series against Montreal, and it felt like a carryover. It felt like there was baggage that was there from the playoffs. That shouldn't be there this year in theory. You know, they bring in new players, and it's really something that they're this fragile that they're here. And one of the biggest things I think that we need to point out when we talk about all this stuff, some people are saying, you know, it's too early, and, you know, they did it last year, they turned it around, and et cetera, et cetera. And they may yet turn it around, but you look at who they've played. They've had the easiest schedule in the whole league.
Yeah,
like they've played all of
Who's the best team they faced?
Washington, right? Like, it's probably the Capitals, who were what, like 12th or 13th in the league last year? They played a huge run of teams that didn't make the playoffs last year. They've lost to Arizona. They lost to San Jose. They lost to Anaheim. That should be impossible for a team that has designs on doing what this team has designs on doing. So not only have they been, people are saying their record's similar to last year. Yes, their record was bad last year. They were not playing this poorly. They had Michael Hutchinson in goal, letting in a bunch of dumb goals. And like, there was other stuff that was going on last year that, you know, Matthews missed the first three games and then came back and was coming off surgery. The Leafs don't have any of those excuses here. And the other thing too, is if you look at possession or you know, the analytics and stuff, they're bad right now. They're bad against bad teams. So this is worse than last year for sure.
Yes. And I think it's dangerous to assume that because they did it last year, like, they'll just do it again. And to your point, Sheldon Keefe mentioned that before the Anaheim game, that the start was similar in some ways, but he mentioned that individual performances from some of their players were better last year. Like, I don't know that they have, like, is there anybody you would say is off to a great start? Not really.
You know who their best player has been? Do you know? You probably will get this right. Do you know who's been their best player?
I don't know. Who?
Samsonov. Samsonov has been their best player. And that's the other thing, too.
Who's been their best skater, James? Like, I don't know who I'd pick. Is it Tavares?
It's probably Tavares. Yeah. It's probably him. Yeah.
But James, to go back to Marner, like, so we don't have the broadcast, obviously, at the arena. So I'm watching the game and I'm like, wait a second, this is weird. Where's Marner? And I'm looking on the bench and I pull up his shift chart. And I'm like, he's skipping him. And then I looked on the bench and I'm like, wait a second. Like, is he hurt? And then I see him do what you mentioned on the broadcast, that he goes into the room and I'm like, that's weird. Like, he grabbed one of his sticks and I was like, is he going to retape his stick, or is he, like, what's he doing? Why is he going to the room? And then obviously you see like what he ends up doing.
You couldn't actually see him destroy it. So I thought maybe he would deny it or something, but he came out after the game and said, he sort of said, that's what you do or something, right? Like, that was,
well,
like, is it? Is that, James, what you do?
Do you think he's ever been benched in his entire life? I can't imagine he has. Like, why would he ever be benched? He's not.
Well, maybe when he was a kid and he was playing with older kids, or I don't know.
So let's get into that though, and then we can kind of dig into some of the stuff that you mentioned before, just about what's going on. You can ask me whatever you want. What do you think that says when a coach goes down that path? Because that's a really big card to play. It's a really risky thing to do. To bench anybody is something. To bench the guy who plays the most minutes on the team from most of the time, like the guy who's, I don't know, had 97 points last year, has been the best right winger in hockey for 2 years running. Like, to do that, what do you think that suggests about what Sheldon Keefe is feeling right now?
Well, I mean, I think the elephant in the room here that I think we can just talk about, that I don't know if, I'm not sure what commentary's out there or whatever. I mean, there's something going on between Sheldon Keefe and Mitch Marner, and it's not just in this one game. Like, I think this is the continuation of something.
Well, happening. James, it's the continuation. You could say, I don't know this, but the one person who was not happy with what Sheldon Keefe had to say after that Arizona game very clearly was Mitch Marner. We know that.
Yeah, like, but
he literally is on the record.
It almost feels bigger than that, doesn't it? Like, it all, yeah.
Could be.
So, yeah. Like, the Leafs are off today. It's Monday when we're recording this. They're going to practice on Tuesday, and they're going to play Philadelphia on Wednesday at home. Tuesday's practice is going to be a gong show. It's going to be a gong show. Like, it's going to be, you know, there's going to be the TV stations that don't normally cover the Leafs are going to show up, and they're going to say, you know, what's wrong with the Leafs? And there's going to be all kinds of questions. And I think one of the biggest questions, and one of the things that people are going to want to write about and ask about, is what's going on with Mitch Marner and Sheldon Keefe. And as they should, because it feels, and I think they're smart enough to say nothing's going on, but I don't think that that's entirely accurate.
But to me, so I'm more interested in why he would decide to do that, because
Well, he's trying to instill some accountability in his team where, you know, if okay. The thing is, Jonas, if like anyone down the lineup made that play, that would happen to them, right? Like if Nylander maybe. Did that, or even if, you know, if Engvall did that, or Yarncroc, or, you know.
But you have to know that the stakes are different when it's Marner, right? Like, for a variety of reasons. Like, he's one of your best, he's your second best player. And he needs to be coached differently, I think, clearly, than someone like Nylander. Like, if you do that to Nylander, like, it would be a story. But I think Nylander...
It's happened with Nylander before, right?
Yeah. And, like, he kind of brushes it off. Like, that stuff really doesn't faze him that much. But Marner, like, you are literally, like, 2 weeks from the day almost where you sort of criticize the top players, but not really. And, like, you don't mention anyone specifically. And that player in particular really takes it personally and does not like it.
That elite players thing, like, why is that so upsetting? I don't understand.
Well, I can see it from the player's side, and this is what we should get into, is I don't
But come on. Like, he didn't even say, like, he didn't call anyone out, or he just said, like, we have better players than Arizona, and they weren't better tonight. Like,
I agree with you that
it's like reading the dictionary definition of what happened in the game.
Yes, and I think, like, you would expect them to be, like, kind of like Austin Matthews was, where he's like, yeah, like he kind of brushes it off. But I could also see it from the perspective of the players, and you can even go back to opening night when Keith kind of just blasts the team after that game. I guess I don't really understand why Keith has decided to take this kind of stance. Like,
I don't understand, Jonas, why there is an urgency from the team. Why don't the players take this stance? Like, why don't they stand up and say?
But let's get back. But let's we can get to that. I think that's a really good question. But
well,
why,
I think that's what Keith's doing. He is saying there's urgency.
Hang on a second. So they are coming off a 115-point season. They played really well in that playoff.
They don't look like it.
But listen, like, they played really well in that series against Tampa. And from, like, before the season even starts, Keith is, like, really, really needling hard. I guess I don't know why.
He's trying to... Because he's trying to change the way that this team is. He's trying to get them up for these games that they don't get up for against the bad teams. Like, it's almost like the schedule maker was like, oh, that'll be funny. Let's just give all the worst teams the Leafs the start of the season and watch them lose those games. And that's exactly what they did. If I'm the coach, I'm like, wake up, guys. Like, what are we doing? Like, do we actually care? Or do we only care,
like, at
points of the season? That's where he's coming from. I mean, Sheldon Keefe is a hyper passionate guy.
But James, like, it is a long fucking season, and if you're gonna start doing that,
well, it might not be a long season for Sheldon Keefe. I mean,
but that's why I don't know that it's the right stance to take, where you are pushing so hard right away that you risk losing the team before the season even gets going.
Like, I mean, if calling them elite players didn't play elite is losing the team, then you got way bigger problems than the coach. James,
come on. Like, if you're blasting the team after the first game of the season like he did, if I'm a player, I'm like, come on, man. Like, it's the first game of the season. Like, were we sharp? No. But, like, it's the first game of the season. Like, cut us a break. You know what I mean?
Well, now it's the 10th game and they're still not sharp.
Yeah, but
I don't know.
So
I don't
clearly,
buy that. So I don't buy the amount of eggs that are being thrown. Like, it's everyone's looking for... Here's the reality in the NHL is that one of the first things that gets changed when a team struggles the way the Leafs are is they change the coach, because it's easy to change the coach.
Yeah, so on the players, and I'm not, like, I think it's a little more than you're making it out to be to me.
What I would say is that people look for ways to blame the coach when it goes sideways.
I'm not looking for ways that I'm watching what's happening, James.
Yeah, well, to me, it's looking for ways to blame the coach.
Okay, well, so you wanted to ask me some things of what I've noticed. One of the things that I've noticed on this trip is, like, it's kind of been a continuation of what's been happening since camp, where he has been pushing really hard and we are not seeing a response. That's one of the things that has stuck out. And that's concerning, because, like, that's what coaching is, right? Like, after that Vegas game, I'm thinking, like, they'll play a lot better in San Jose. No, that doesn't happen.
But then, you know what the thing, like, if he didn't do that, Jonas, if he wasn't expressing urgency, if he wasn't pushing guys, if he wasn't sitting Mitch Marner, everyone would be, and they were losing games, everyone would be sitting here and saying, Why isn't Sheldon O'Keefe doing anything? Why isn't there any accountability on this team? Why isn't he coming out and calling out when players play poorly? That's what would be happening in Toronto. They would just, like, based on what happened on the ice, that's what people would say is people are doing wrong.
It's different in Toronto. Like, I think you have to coach a team like the Leafs with the attention that they have or are under differently, because I think part of your job, and we discussed this before, I think at some point, I think part of your job is how you manage things publicly. And I think a lot of the times you need to downplay fire. Like, you almost need to put out fires, not keep them spreading and keep them alive. And I think what he's done at certain points so far is he's kept the fire going. Like, and in fact, he's made it bigger with some of the things he said. And, like, I just don't know what you're gaining from that. And I guess, like, to go back to Marner, I don't know.
Other than the elite player thing, like, what's the quote that he said that was so inflammatory that it has led to the team's downfall?
I'm just telling you, James, like, even in training camp, he is like, he's been
all over them. What did he say? But what did he say that was like, I can't even
I'm
think
just
of
telling
like
you, a headline. But it's not what it's what he's done and how hard he's pushed from the first days of camp, where he has been like blasting them during practices when they've been like off. Like, that's fine. Like, you can tell a team like this is not good enough, but like he has been on them constantly.
What was the thing with Michael Bunting? He was like in Michael Bunting's face. Was that on the trip?
That was on the trip. And like, James, that I got to tell you, like, that was like an alarming moment for me watching that, because like, it didn't look like Sheldon was really getting in his ear and not happy. And it kind of looked like Bunting was kind of just like skating away, being like, dude, get off my back. And that's the kind of thing where I'm like, that doesn't look
well. Right. You know, it's interesting. I guess Sheldon Keefe has two ways he can go about this. He can, I mean, at least you see someone with some emotion and like fighting for something here.
Yeah, but like that, one thing I don't love is like we judge them based on how they talk to the media, and like who cares like if they show emotion in how they talk to the media. It's more. I know.
Well,
you're,
the
Bunting
thing
that
wasn't talking to the media.
No, that's true. Yeah, that's fair. I know what you're saying. I guess the more I've thought about this, just this morning in LA, what is the upside of doing that? Like, what do you gain by benching Marner? Like, it feels like it's only downside.
Accountability. Like, you're having accountability on your team where it doesn't matter who it is. And there are other coaches that have coached that way in the past. Is it going to work? I mean, well, this is the problem I have with this whole conversation. Like, we're 16 minutes in or whatever to the show, and it's all Sheldon Keefe. Like, what percentage of the blame of what's happened this year is on Sheldon Keefe? Like, to me, it's not.
Then
he's not at the top of the list.
Okay, but then James, like, what is then you're kind of like downplaying the role of a coach. Like, if a team is underachieving like they are in literally all facets, of course some of that is on the players,
number
but
one,
it's also on the coach.
Maybe it's not a greatly constructed team. I mean, look at the way the blue line has played. Look at the players that they've got.
Okay, so let's get into
Sheldon
that.
Keefe's not telling Justin Hall to pass it to the other team every 10 minutes.
No, that's fair. Okay, so let's talk about the blue line, because that's one. That's a really good point. Like, he can only coach the defense he has, and right now the defense he has is not good enough.
Brutal. They've been brutal.
Well, so they're missing two of their top six.
Probably two of their top four, right?
But again, to bring it back to Keefe, I don't know that dressing Philip Kroll over the weekend makes sense, and it completely backfired. Like, they couldn't play him. Like, in that situation, like, I'm not sure why you would want to play someone who's never played in the league. Is like Victor Mete did not have a good game in San Jose, but like the team is like really scuffling, and like their defense is
back
like
to back, and your team's struggling. And I thought Mete was fine in the first three games that he played. So playing Kroll in the back to back was, but I don't know. I don't know that Philip Kroll isn't the reason why the team is where it is right now. I mean, there's...
Well, I mean, he was on the... Like, he almost caught... He cost them, like, a couple goals. So, I don't know. Anyway.
The other thing, too, Jonas, is that this team did this BS under the last coach. That's
the
other
thing.
Yeah,
that coach got fired, and the president and GM said, like, what was going on wasn't good enough.
Right?
Well, it sort of... Well, I mean,
And so they're back here again, Jonas. So my point is, I think that there's problems with the roster construction right now. I think losing Jake Muzzin is going to be, I don't know, and Liljegren, like they just don't have enough there on the, and if Hall's playing like garbage, then,
well, and the other thing,
there's
James
not
is
enough.
Like,
they don't have enough. You know, Giordano looks his age.
Well, and that's a problem. Like, that's
how many defensemen do you really, can you really trust it to be good in it? Yeah, you have two. And even then, like, Riley's had a hard time defending the blue line. Like, it's, and the funny, I don't remember this being an issue last year, but the Leafs are having such a hard time getting out of their zone.
Yes.
Their D can't move the puck. And they're playing bad teams. Again, they're playing bad teams and they can't move the puck.
So
let me finish my thought.
Sure.
So the roster construction is an issue because the blue line is just not very good right now. And I'm not sure that that's because Keith called out the elite players or whatever. And then the other thing is that not only is there problems with their roster construction, but there are guys that you're counting on to be difference makers who haven't done that yet.
Well, that's a big thing. And so, like, to your point, if you want to say, it's not all on Sheldon Keefe, obviously, but his job is to get the best out of his team. And right now he's not getting the best out of his team. And part of that is, like, their top guys haven't looked like top guys. Like, they, as a team, James, they look slow, like, most of the time. Like, they don't look like the team they did last year. I thought there were really intriguing is the wrong word, but there were signs of the Matthews line. Like, I thought Matthews skated as well as he has all year early in that Ducks game. And I was like, oh man, like, he's coming, like, this is happening. And then they just kind of petered out. And so you go through it, like, Matthews has 1 5-on-5 point. John Tavares hasn't scored a 5-on-5 goal.
They've been terrible at even strength.
They've not been good at even strength. And, like, that's
look
their
look
advantage.
At how dominant. Like, yeah. Well, look how dominant Matthews and Marner have been at even strength.
Well, Matthews is literally, yeah, like, they were, I think they were, like,
Matthews is probably the best even strength player in the NHL.
Yes. And the best even strength scorer since the day he came into the league, basically. And he's not scoring.
So who would have predicted that coming into this year that even strength play would be this team's problem and downfall? It's really, so anyway, I just think that, I think it's fine that Sheldon Keefe is under the microscope and people are talking about it. I just think it's outsized how much people are talking about it and blaming him. And I think it's a bit of a cop-out when there's some very clear mistakes that were made in the front office. And
which mistakes? So, which do you mean?
Well, I mean, which of their additions from the offseason worked?
Okay, well, so that's a good point. I actually was going to write about that. But
most of what,
like,
they did in the offseason didn't work. Most of the way they allocated their cap space.
To your earlier point, it's 10 games in. So, like, you can go through some of those guys, and I can tell you, I don't think any of them are comfortable yet. Like, I thought Zach Aston-Reese played well in Anaheim. Like, I thought that was his best game. Abe Kubel is not comfortable yet.
Aston-Reese has 0 points.
Yarncroak is Yarncroak. Like, to me, that's what he is shown so far, is kind of who he is. Like, he's fine. Like, he's just not going to change your life.
So they had a decision with, like, how much cap space did they have in the offseason? They had, like, maybe $10 million. Mm-hmm. They had a decision what to do with that and how to supplement their roster. They spent half of it on Matt Murray. They spent another big chunk on Yarncroak and Samsonov. Samsonov has been good, not taking anything away from that. But most of what they tried to do to improve this roster, or at least keep it as good as it was last year, has not worked. It has not worked.
Well, including
that's not
back Jake
on
Muzzin.
Sheldon. I don't think that's on Sheldon Keefe. Yeah, and yeah. I mean, Jake Muzzin situation is, so there's $5.6 million. You look at, like, look how much dead cap space they have right now. Jonas is doing nothing for them.
100%.
Muzzin is 5.6. This is what I was going to write. I was going to write something tonight that's going to be, but good. I can preview it here. Murray makes 4.7. So already we're into over 10 million. What's that? 10 and a half million. That's giving them nothing.
Zero.
And then, you know, Yarncroak's playing 12 minutes a game, 13 minutes a game. Not really. You gave him 2 million. Engvall, you gave a raise to 2.25. You start adding it up, and they spent, part of the way that you win in the NHL is contract efficiency. Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the things I think we could say about the Leafs in the past is we would look at their roster and it's like, there's not a lot of really bad contracts there. Mm-hmm. But this year there are. This year there's a lot of problems. So all of a sudden, you're not playing with the same 81.5 million cap as everybody else because you've got 11, 12, 13, 14 million that's doing nothing for you. In some cases, literally. So the Leafs, why don't they look like an $81.5 million contending team? They literally don't have a bunch of that money on the ice night to night.
Well, and like James, you go back to the summer previous, it's like they hit home runs with Bunting, with Kampf, with Kasha. And now you look at the current group and it's like Abe Kubel, Aston Reese, Yarncroc, and it's just you're not getting
none of it has worked
for the buck. Yeah, it hasn't.
None of it has worked. And I honestly, I don't think that that's on Sheldon Keefe.
No, that's you're right. I think that's fair. I think, man, like they could not afford to keep Ilya Mikheyev, but they like that's a guy I can feel that they miss. Like they miss his speed, they miss like his tenacity, his hustle. Like Yarncroc is.
I mean, they miss Hyman. I mean, they
yeah. Like this
they,
is
they tried
this is
to some, keep him, but
yeah. But like this is some roster. What's the word? What's attrition? Like over the years,
even someone like Kasha, who was making $1 million, who brought some energy, and I know he only played 50 some games.
Could score.
But yeah. Well, they played him on the first power play unit. They played him on the first line sometimes. You know, he played penalty kill power. You know, like
yeah. Well, and James, like
so, some of these guys they added don't they don't.
They don't
I don't
know.
Right now, I don't know what they do, to be honest. Like, Abe Kubel has been terrible.
I'm telling you, man, he's not comfortable yet. Like, he.
There have been some games. Isn't. Well, there's some games I'm watching. It's like, where's 96 going?
He's also not super experienced. Like, he's still young. He's still young in the league. And, like, so you mentioned Pierre Engvall. Like, they give him 2.25 in the offseason. And you're expecting, oh, like, he'll take Mikheyev's role. He'll do everything Mikheyev. He's not been good. Like, he's not done that. He's looked more like the Pierre Engvall of all these years where it's like, what's he doing?
Well, don't you, like, if you go back to the, remember, I think it was last year, we were talking about potentially Engvall was going to end up on waivers. Like,
yes.
With their cap situation and everything, like he was a bubble guy for years.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, not only is he not a bubble guy, he's making 2.25 and he's a guy that you need and he's not able to do it.
Yeah. So I think to your point, you're right. It's not all on Sheldon Keefe, obviously. I think some of it is. Like, his job is to get the best out of
the team. That's fine.
But like,
I just feel like the conversation around the team is like 85% about Sheldon Keefe right now, and everyone just wants the sacrificial firing to happen.
Fair.
And it's like, look at all this other shit that's wrong.
Well, it's going to be very
hard
for them.
Look how bad the D is, and like, look at all the things they did in the offseason are working. They got $11 million on LTIR right now. Like,
yeah.
Sheldon Keefe didn't do any of that.
Well, and it's going to be very hard for them to win if Matthews, Marner, Tavares, and Nylander are just not generating offense at 5-on-5. Like, it just is. So like that's how they're built. Like, they're built on those guys kind of carrying them through. And if Matthews and Tavares had, I don't know, 7 or 8 goals by now, it might look a lot different and we would think a little bit differently about some of those depth pieces. But now when the top guys aren't producing, you're looking at the depth piece and you're like, can they give them anything? So,
I just wonder, like, if you redid the offseason right now, like, if let's say you and I wrote an article and we're like, okay, you got 11, 12 million, let's redo it. Like, don't get Matt Murray.
They should have done that at the time.
No, like, I know. Go sign like Eric Comrie or someone. Like, get, you know, that's, we were kind of saying that. Like, why don't you take, like, the Samsonov gambles? Why don't you take a chances on two guys? If it doesn't work, acquire a goalie at midseason or whatever. Anyway, so there's a way potentially you could, and then you got more money to spend up front. You know, we wrote a lot about, is there a way you can get rid of Muzzin's contract?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had the no movement clause, so.
But it was, we talked about it at the time, like it was risky bringing him back, given his age, given his health. This sucks for him. Like, I feel bad for him. And like, you obviously just want his life to be okay. Like, you don't want him to have some of the issues that lots of players end up having. So that's like first and foremost. But like, this is someone who really showed signs of like decline and like. Had two really scary injuries last year. And it's like, and yet like I could feel more as camp was going along, like his impact in the dressing room was probably something that I maybe undervalued. But like,
my understanding, Jonas, is they watched him in the playoffs last year and they were like, yeah, like he can still do it.
I think that's true, but that's great. But like, just to assume that that's going to happen again for someone who's getting older and has been banged up, like is really, that's risky to just be like, yeah, the best of Jake Muzzin, we can get that again. I mean, I didn't think at the time. But anyway, like, before we get to the pod bag, because I know we got a lot of questions. Let's take a break, and then I just want to talk a little bit about some of the lineup changes that they made and what the impact of that stuff can be.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, James. Man, we could have done like 3 hours today. But let's talk a little bit about...
we might have to do... If they lose again... to Philly, we might have to just do another show. So we have 90 questions in the, like, how many are we going to get to? 10?
Yeah.
So, like, we appreciate everybody. Everybody's fired up, and we appreciate people listening and sending in questions every week. To remind you, you can send in questions once a week in our app.
All right. Before we get to that, so Keefe continued to change his lineup, and I think some of the more interesting things he did was... he played Nylander at center. He split up Nylander and Tavares, and he played Riley on right D with Rasmus Sandin, because TJ Brody was needed to help Justin Hall. Pick any of those, and we can talk about them first.
I think what was going on the D was interesting. There's trying some things like Riley on the right side and... Mm-hmm. Crawl and Sandin played more. I don't know. Brody with Hall. Like, it's...
well, I wrote after the game in LA, James, that they had to do that. Like, that they couldn't... they needed to give Justin Hall, as much as he was struggling, they needed to give him someone a little bit more stable than Sandin. Like, to me, that was like a no brainer. You had to do that.
I feel like you're playing Anaheim. It's like, it just, like, sit Hall for a game or put him on the third pair. Like, he's been so bad. How can you play? Like, he played
that you can't
21
play,
and a half minutes again.
You can't play. I'm sorry. You can't play you can't play Mete and Crawl anybody, on the right side.
Anybody would be better than some of the games that Hall has. Like, Hall has literally cost them games again and again and again. So, like, we talk about accountability. I think if you want to criticize Sheldon Keefe for anything, I think that playing Justin Hall 22 minutes after the way...
disagree. Who do you want to play?
He was actually okay against Anaheim, but...
yeah, he was better. Like, all of a sudden, you needed to do something to kind of make calm things down, and TJ Brody's that guy. Like, I think that was a good move. I don't know who you want them to play instead. Like, you want them to play Victor Mete, who's like...
You're playing the worst team in the NHL. You can't play... number seven.
James, come on. You're going to dress Crawl and Mete as your second and third right D. Like,
it's
on.
So funny. The depth D that they brought in, like Dahlstrom and Jordy Ben, like, yeah. Who would have ever thought we'd be like,
thought that this would happen, that they would be playing this soon.
Well, they're missing four D right now, four of the, who they thought were going to be. If you go down their depth chart, their top nine, they're missing four of them. And now two of them are 7 and 9, but when you're missing those guys, all of a sudden you're down to the Crawls.
You're down to the crawl space. Is that good? No.
Is it like a front crawl? Crawl space. Yeah.
I think they have a real issue to figure out with this Nylander Tavares thing, because the numbers are actually worse than last year.
We talked about this 2 weeks ago, and
You told me we got pushback, but it's like,
we
this
got some
is
heat
continued
from
to-
it, but they just, I don't know. I just don't.
I don't know what you do.
That, yeah. Well, so they got four elite pieces up front, right? And that's all they got.
Well,
those are their four. Who else is elite on their forward group?
No, but like, I think there are different classes of elite. But yeah, fair. Okay.
No, they do, like, they're spending most of their money on the four guys, mm-hmm. and They don't want to. I think they got to break up Matthews.
I think that's exactly what I was going to say. I think you have to start contemplating
you
that.
You have to.
And not just James as like a little band-aid. Oh, we're just going to switch them for a game. I think they have to actually consider like doing it more with a long-term vision in mind.
I guess that what Keefe is worried about pissing the players off by doing that. Is that what I don't know why there's a hesitation. I remember writing last year early on. Last year, I was like, I think you got to break these guys up because it's not working. And then they ended up figuring it out and have being fantastic.
No, they did break
in
them up.
Second half,
they broke them up.
Yeah,
but it was
very
never
briefly.
Yeah, it was never like a serious. We're actually going to do this. It was more like let's just break them up and try to change things and then get them back together. I think the reason you do it, James, or start to really contemplate it is you need to think. Like Keith is thinking, I think. By keeping them together, like these guys were literally like the best duo in the NHL last year, outside of if you want to throw McDavid and Draisaitl, who didn't always play together, but like they were fantastic together. But I'm not sure you're coming out ahead if Tavares and Nylander are such a drain. I kind of wonder if you can be better as a team if you have Matthews and Nylander together and Tavares and Marner together, where suddenly both lines are pretty good, if not quite as explosive as that top unit. Does that make sense?
I don't know if I articulated it well enough, but you have four elite guys. You can't play them on three different lines. Like how much did Nylander even play last night? 13 minutes or something? Like that makes no sense. It makes no sense.
But what do you do? Like they cannot, they've tried every possible third person with those guys. And all the time, like it just doesn't work.
I think you got to put Marner with Tavares again. I mean, that first year they played together, they looked really good. When Matthews was out, they looked good. I mean, you pointed out that, remember when Matthews missed the first, whatever, three games of the year last year?
Mm-hmm.
Even with, I mean, Matthews ended up missing, what, like nine games last year? Something like that?
Yeah, it's nine.
And they would often play Tavares in between Bunting and Marner.
Yep.
And it looked pretty good.
Yeah. I think that's actually, like I mentioned to you, like maybe you just flip both sets of wingers. Like you just play Bunting with Tavares and Marner and you play, I don't know, Kerfoot with Matthews and Nylander. And literally not, and not just, and not the problem, the other problem that I mentioned is who is your other center? They don't have another center. That's the other problem that they're having is like Kerfoot, again, they've decided rightly, like you were texting me, like he can't play center. Like, and they, Yarncroc isn't a good center. So like, who do you play at center? Like, who's your fourth guy? I don't know.
Oh, again, boy. These are problems
that's
for the offseason.
That's a roster construction question.
So we have like a million questions that we need to get to, and we are limited on time. So
let's take a break and let's get to the questions.
Okay.
All right. All right, James, Bob Bag time. We are short on time, so let's start motoring through the questions.
All right, I got a spicy one for you right off
the
top.
Nice, spicy. I love spicy.
Spicy. I think spicy works better on the podcast. And in print, I see it and I'm like, I get Scrabble face, as O-Dog would say. I know,
it's like your word you hate.
I don't know, it just, maybe I'm
Do you like spicy
not,
food?
No.
No, see, there you go. You have bad reactions to the word. I love spicy food. All right, go ahead.
Chris says, he says, I'm not sure you're willing to go here, but why do so many hockey experts credit Kyle Dubas with being a good NHL GM? I like Dubas, and I believe he, like many Leafs players, is destined to win a cup for another team. This is a really long question that I won't answer. He says, however, this is a results-oriented business, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do you want to go first, or do you want me to answer this question?
You can go first.
Yes, it is a results-oriented business. Kyle Dubas does not have a contract beyond this year. He's literally going to lose his job if the results are not there this year. And through the first 10 games this year, it's not looking great. Let's put it that way. So why do people credit Kyle Dubas with being a good GM?
They
look at the track record of the team. Well, I mean, the story of his performance with the franchise is still being written. It's still going on right now. You know, if the Matt Murray situation turns into a pumpkin and is terrible, his tenure is going to be looked at differently than if he comes back and plays really well. I mean, that's just his track record is still being borne out. But the reason why in the offseason people talked about Kyle Dubas being a good GM was the team got better and better. It had 115 points last year. There were a lot of moves that made sense, certainly leading, I think, into last season. there were good acquisitions. But if it all blows up this year, then I think this is the other thing too. I talked about how people are it's kind of a cop out and they're all pointing to Sheldon Keefe. There's also a huge faction of fans and media that have wanted Kyle Dubas to fail from the very beginning, it feels like. And
yeah, that's probably fair.
When they have a bad 10 games, it's like, fire the GM, fire the GM. And when they have a 115-point season at the end of last year, nobody's saying that. So we're trying in on this show to not do that, to not be overly reactive and explosive just based on what happened in the last game. There's a lot of that happens in the market. And we're trying not to do that. So that's why before the season, we would talk about and say, you know, Kyle Dubas has done a pretty good job. And 10 games in, it's like, well, some of the things he's done haven't worked, because I think that's a reasonable thing to say.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And the only thing I would add, James, is like his big bet this season was the goaltending, obviously, but also just bringing back those core guys and not removing one of them or changing something substantial. And we still need to see how the season plays out before we can determine if that was right.
Yeah, people probably aren't going to like hearing this, but like it's, I mean, they could turn it around, right? So
sure.
I don't know. It's going to look pretty silly if you're condemning the GM right now.
That's why it's like you look at the new additions and you're like, they haven't worked. But yeah, like if it's been 10 games, like we need a little bit more to know if those can pay off. Like anyway, let's get to the next question.
This is a good question, and it's also spicy. I think probably all 90 of the questions are
increasingly
spicy.
Have you ever been to the Salad King where they have like yes, the peppers beside it indicating
how
the
many
spice
chilies
level? Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yes.
Well, the Salad King, if people haven't eaten there, it's a great Thai place. We used to get that all the time because
near Ryerson.
At the student newspaper at Ryerson where I went, that was every week we would get that on production day, which was the day that the paper came out. So yeah, I'm like a one chili guy. So I'm definitely Scottish. Okay, so Zachary S asks, how hot is Sheldon's hot seat after this road trip?
Getting hot. It's funny,
you
James.
Were there. How many chilies, Jonas?
We're like at three, I think. Like it's funny, like I did Leafs lunch before the season, and it was like right around the time when one of those gambling sites mentioned like Keith being fired, and I was like, they asked me about it
first coach being fired, right?
And
one site had him at the top,
and I thought it was the most asinine thing, not the question, but like the idea that would happen. I was like, they're too good, like that's not going to happen. And yet like everything that could go wrong to start the season has gone wrong, and suddenly it's like if they keep playing like this for 5-10 more games, it's like suddenly I think it's something Kyle Dubas and management have to start thinking about, is where I would be at.
I think probably 10 games would be my line.
That's me too, I think. But like James, like if they play like they continue to play like this for another 5 games.
Well, you got to try and save the season at some point.
Yes. I don't know. Then it gets dicey. Like they really, and the schedule's not easy. Like
the other thing too, Jonas, is that, well, that's, I mean,
they passed the easy schedule. Yeah.
They're through the easy part of the schedule. Yeah. The other thing too, I was going to say, Jonas, is that hangs over this is that Barry Trotz does not have a job, and he's out there doing radio interviews saying, oh, it'd be interesting to coach an original six team one day. And it's like, wow. Like you talk about like outside pressure factors. You got a coach who's won a Stanley Cup recently, who's extremely experienced, available. Like if that wasn't there, if it was, you know, I've seen it in the past where people are like, fire the coach. It's like, well, who are you going to bring in a midseason that's going to like make a difference? And there's a very obvious answer to that question. To be clear, I don't think that they should do this. I think that the amount of angst about Sheldon Keefe is outsized for where the problems with this team are right now. But it's the easiest change to make. And the thing we haven't talked about that, I don't know, we're going to need another show to talk about or something, is that the other thing you could do other than fire the coach is make a trade and change your roster somehow. Well, so
are you talking like a significant trade or just like trading Pierre Engvall or something?
It depends. It depends what you count as significant. But I would think I would start with some of the those $2 million guys that aren't playing well.
Yeah, he's a UFA at the end of the year. He would be the guy I'd look at.
Justin Hall?
yeah, you just need, yeah. If they don't have any D, man. Like, they can't keep, they got to get more D, better D.
The good thing about a trade is you get something back, hopefully.
I don't think you're getting much back in that kind of transaction.
Well, that's an indictment of him playing 21 and a half minutes in the lineup when, you know, like, if nobody else wants the guy. Here's another good question, also spicy. Taylor wants to know, does the Leafs analytics department not care about injury history? It seems we have a history now of rolling the dice or trading for people with a long list of injuries. Matt Murray, Peter Mrazek, Andre Kasha, relying on Jake Muzzin. While the transactions look good on paper, assuming good health, because, you know, obviously the analytics for all those players are pretty good. It's hard to have consistency if there are players that are getting hurt all the time. I think it's a fair point.
Fair point. Yep. Yeah, it's not like any of those guys, like Mrazek, that was his history. Like, he was always hurt or he was inconsistent. And then he came here and he was always hurt and he was inconsistent. Like, it's like...
And they were like, I know the answer. Let's get another guy that's like that.
Yeah, well...
I mean, Kasha, at least you're only paying $1 million. Like, I think they got everything that they could have hoped for out of him, but...
The Murray one is really tough. Like, they really need him to be able to come back and stay healthy and perform. And, like, I just don't know if that... Both things will happen.
Well, and they're going to have to give him a little bit of runway to come back, right? Like, if the team's a complete disaster, it's going to be hard breaking him in.
Well, James... I wrote about it, and I told you, obviously, at the time, like, there was, like, a moment where at a morning skate where it looked like Ilya Samsonov was hurt, and I was thinking, oh, my God, what's going to happen, like, if Samsonov is hurt, and now Murray's out, and that obviously didn't play out, but, like, man, they were, like, so close to disaster with that.
The Eric Schallgren show.
Oh, my God. And that's another one, like, you mentioned, like, front office stuff. I thought they should have brought in a third goalie who's more experienced. And I still think that, like, Schallgren to me does not look like...
Well, even look down on the Marlies, they don't really have anyone else. No, I mean, I know Schallgren came in last year and, like,
he was sub 900, like, but, like, he wasn't good.
Yeah. I picked him up in my pool this week because he was getting the two starts, and it's like, well, maybe, you know, maybe I'll get a win or two. And,
like, well, and that's another one, James, if you want to, like, critique Sheldon Keefe, like, starting Schallgren and not Samsonov in San Jose, like, obviously,
well, he said Samsonov. He said Samsonov was not feeling well.
All right.
Well, Samsonov also is like not. How many seasons has he played a lot of games? Like, I think they're worried about him potentially breaking down if you try and play him all the time.
Yeah, and that's a fair counter for sure.
They need another goaltender. Depending on when Murray's going to be back, they need another defenseman and they need another forward.
That's a lot of things. Yeah, now, Schallgren in three starts has an .875 save percentage.
That is...
Which is close to last year.
That is an AHL save percentage. This is another good question. The questions are awesome today, so sorry to everyone we don't get to. Adriano says, how does this tailspin compare to the final days of the Mike Babcock era in terms of the atmosphere around the team? I was around the team on a similar trip. That was the Vegas, Arizona, Colorado trip. I was there when Babcock got fired. You were on this trip. You were around them going back to the Vegas game.
Well, and James, like, I was around them before that Arizona game. I was there at that 7-1 game in Pittsburgh, right, where it was like, I think I literally wrote after the game, like, they're going to have to start thinking about this because, like...
Well, that's where they decided to fire him, right? Like, Babcock coached one more game, but, like...
Something was, like, really wrong. And, like, I'll never forget, James, like, walking out, like, after they did all their post-game stuff after that game. And, like, I was just in the underbellies of the arena in Pittsburgh. And I just remember seeing Morgan Riley and, like, I'll never forget the look on his face. Like, it was just, like, this look of dejection. And, like, I hadn't seen that before, and I'm starting to get similar vibes. I don't think they're quite there yet, but it's moving. Well,
they were
in
deeper
that
into the season. They were deeper.
They were deeper into the season. Right.
Babcock was fired, I believe it was 23 games in. They were. Yeah. I think they were 19-4-1 or something like that.
Yeah.
And there was really, really deep friction with the coach and some of the players, and I don't think that that's there right now.
But so, James, like, now we're starting to get into that stuff because, like, now we have this thing with Marner, And you know what else is similar, James? So you,
it's not widespread though, the way that it was under Babcock.
I can tell you, James, like other things are similar. Like they had injuries at the time that Mike Babcock was fired. They had new players who were coming in who didn't fit in right away. Like there are some similarities.
They had goaltending that was problematic.
Like they had goaltending, their best players weren't great. Like there are some similarities to what was going on. Now,
did Kaskasuo play that Pittsburgh game?
He had to play Kaskasuo in that game. And that was like, I think he probably wanted to play Frederik Andersen in both nights of the back-to-back and couldn't for whatever reason. And James, like you could even go back to last year and it has similar vibes. Like remember how tense things were after that game they lost to Pittsburgh, also 7-1 last year? Like it was like
which 7-1 Pittsburgh game are you talking about, Jonas? Yeah. You're gonna have to be more specific.
I don't know if the other one was 7-1, maybe it was 6-1. Either way, bad Pittsburgh game.
Well, and was it Hutchinson that they were playing in with Kaskasuo that was, or was it
So what season was it
Sparks at that point?
Oh my God. I think it was, so it's 1920. I can find it quickly. It was.
Nenroth.
Oh my God. No, he was gone way before that. Yeah. Kaskasuo started that game and Andersen had started the night before. That's why he couldn't start again.
Hmm. But there was another goalie that was in the mix because I just remember hearing that Mike Babcock did not.
Well, no, remember Hutchinson got fired into the sun because he had been so bad. And they were like, Babcock was like, I'm not playing this guy again. Remember the Chicago game? That's where that was the end for Hutchinson. I remember writing after that game, like, they can't play this guy again. They can't.
Well, then they brought him back. I wrote it at the beginning of last year. Like, you can't believe he blew the game against San Jose last year early in the season. It's like, why is this guy still here? None of the players believe in the goalie.
He's like Mike Myers. He just keeps coming back.
What's the new
back.
One called?
Halloween Ends.
Halloween Ends.
I'd like Hutchinson, to see it.
Hutchinson Ends. It's finally over.
He's going to come back, James.
He's not coming back. No, Hutchinson Ends. Jamie Lee Curtis came out and stabbed him. Happy Halloween, everyone. I got to go trick-or-treating tonight.
Sean McKenzie and I were really trying to get Mark Masters to wear a costume on the broadcast yesterday. We just couldn't. He just wouldn't do it.
Well, why doesn't Sean has a broadcast? Why doesn't he wear one?
Yeah, that's fair.
Come on.
But it would have been more funny with Mark.
Come on, Mac. I call
Mark's
Sean Little
funnier
Mac.
Than Mark.
Little
than
Mac.
Sean. All right, go ahead.
No, Sean's pretty funny.
I love
we should
Sean.
Have Sean on the, we should have Sean on this show.
Yeah, that would be I'll fun. Talk to him, sure.
We're overdue to have Mark Masters on. We told him like 3 weeks ago he was coming on and we haven't used him yet. Jason says, I don't know if we're going to be able to answer this or not, but I will throw it out there. How long before the MLSE board steps in to shake up the management team? I don't get the impression that Shanahan will ever fire Dubas or that Dubas will ever fire Keefe, and that's a major problem.
I don't know if either of those things are true.
No, I disagree. I think that when it comes down to it, those things will happen when they... It might take longer than the fans want. Like, there's some fans that want it to happen right now because they're frustrated. I mean, the fact that Dubas didn't get a contract extension, I mean, it's basically... If they don't have a good season this year, he's not coming back. Like, that's decided already. So to say that Shanahan's not willing to walk away from Dubas, I mean, the door is open right now, right?
I mean, he got rid of Lou. Like, we know how close their relationship was. I do think the dynamic between Keefe and Dubas would be interesting in a situation like this, just because he's like literally the only coach he's hired in the NHL. And obviously their relationship stretches back so long. So making that move, I think, would be different than it would be firing Babcock, who he didn't hire.
I remember we saw with Burke and Ron Wilson how they had this friendship that went all the way back to when they were in college, and it was just completely ruined by I don't think Lou Lamoriello and Brandon Shanahan's relationship is ever going back. Babcock's relationship with Brendan Shanahan is, you know,
probably not going back.
It's, you know, so like that it can be, it's not easy to fire your friends.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that again, I think it would take longer than some fans would want it to, but I do think that both men would. I mean, they're worried about their jobs too, right? You know, at some point.
Well, and sometimes like it would be out of your hands. Like they Kyle Dubas might not have a choice. Like they might just tell him like you have to do this.
And yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. I mean, who knows? I mean, they could even be having the discussion today and saying, yeah,
very possible.
Under what scenario does this start going in that direction?
Right. And what's your plan?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, they probably would need to. They're like, if we lose another 10 games, 8 games, we have to do something. We have to start thinking about it and talking about it. Mm-hmm. And then Kyle probably says, it's not time yet. You know, I still think it's going to turn around. It's only 10 games, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And David says, does the Leafs coaching staff and management give the players too much control and latitude? There doesn't seem to be any consequence for poor efforts and perceived attitude of arrogance towards weaker opponents. So this is like, this is the thing that people will say if you don't bench Marner. This is the counterpoint to what you're talking about. Well, but why would you do that?
I hear that. I just don't know that the upside is worth the downside. If you lose Marner, like, good luck. Like, you're pooched. Like, he's your most important player after Matthews or after Riley, whatever.
I just, like, if you lose him for saying that elite players thing or whatever.
No, like, you lose him for this. You lose him for this. And James, like, I can tell you, you know this. There was never, that when Mike Babcock put Mitch Marner on the fourth line when he was still pretty young in the league, that never went away. That never went away. They never forgot that. Like you can justify it, rationalize it all you want. Like Marner was like a kid, like in like he put him on the fourth line for like 2 games, and that never was something that it seemed like he got past. So
well, I mean, there's two parties at play here, and
you've embarrassed him, James. Like that's there are ramifications to that.
It's hockey. I mean, guys miss. You're guys are going to miss shifts.
Man, you're ignoring like the
but human but Jonas, side what you're it. Doing though is you're just blaming only one side here.
I'm not. I acknowledge that their top players have not been good enough, James. But like when you embarrass,
no. But the way that they're reacting to this, it's like suck it up and play better.
I think both things can be true, man.
The fact that there's like pouting or whatever about the elite players thing is like, what is going on?
Let's go to the next question. I think we have time for like one more.
Let's see. Sean G says, when does the hurting stop? Is that, we don't know. We just work here, okay? Like we don't cause the hurting. We're not a party to it. We're just going to tell you the hows and the whys of the hurting and try and make sense of it if we even can.
While you're trying to find the question, I'm just looking at some of the 5-on-5 goal numbers. Defensively at 5-on-5, they've been as bad as Vancouver, 15th. Tampa's been a little bit worse, so there's that.
Well, I mean, the glaring thing to me is that they've always been a strong team at controlling play. Like, in the only time that they weren't in the last, whatever, 4 or 5 years was when Babcock got fired. There was some serious weakness showing there.
That's one of the weird... Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah.
Well, but one of the weird things about like the talk about Trotz is like, well, he'll make them into a good defensive team. It's like, actually, no, they've been a good defensive team for a little bit now.
But they're not controlling play.
No, and that's what's alarming right now.
Against bad teams. Again.
Yeah, against bad teams. Where do they rank in expected goals? They rank. They're up to 11th
or something.
They're up to 11th.
Well, I mean, the expected goals at even strength against Anaheim weren't that bad, but it's Anaheim. Anaheim's expected goals on the year was like, they were last. They were like 40%.
Yeah, they're bad.
Everybody is 60% against Anaheim.
Yeah, true.
Tim asks a question that goes back to what we were talking about earlier in the show. He says the early returns on the bets that Dubas made in the offseason are bad. If those signings don't show signs of life, is it safe to say this team is what the underlying numbers are showing? A bad to mediocre team that's going to struggle to be in the playoff picture. I still don't think so, but...
No, I don't think so.
But if you struggle for 2 months... And then the goaltending isn't there. And what do you do to replace the loss of Muzzin if Hall doesn't turn it around?
Well, Liljegren will come back. So that's one thing. But again, like, I don't know what Liljegren's going to do. He's played 1 year in the league.
And also, it's hard to step in when you miss training camp. And
great
you're
point.
Coming off surgery. And like, they got, you know, they need some time to get up to speed. And if everything's on fire, it's hard to do that. Yeah. It's like you got to come in and do your piano recital in a house that's on fire. It's like it's not easy to do.
That would be hard. I don't know how to play piano, but I can see that being hard.
Well, yeah, it's like trying to concentrate when there's like all, you know, and try and get yourself right when there's all kinds of things going on. Oh, we can end on this note. Judson says, I can't wait for your poem. Make it sad. I didn't write a poem. I'm sorry. I will write. I'll try and write one for the next episode.
Walt Myrtle or James Whit Myrtle.
All right, Jonas.
I think that's enough. Well, we'll see how things play out. Obviously, it's tense in around the team right now. But it's a long season. So we'll see what this week brings and see if they can turn things around. They've got a difficult schedule. They play Philly at home on Wednesday, and then they have a back-to-back Boston, Carolina. So we'll see, James, how that goes. I bid you adieu. Have a good week. We'll talk next week.